Welcome to New Realities and New Realities Radio here on BBS. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I present what I consider is the leading edge evolution of consciousness and where we're going as an evolutionary race on this planet. What we're listening to in the background is Chris Williamson, A Song of the Soul, which was sort of a big hit in the 70s, nice folk music, which is sort of the theme of this program, The Song of the Soul, the eternal sense of who we are in this spiritual awakening that we're coming into. And along those lines, I've just put up a website that connects to this radio show called newrealities.com, which is a listings of events around New York City and eventually around the country that will bring together a community of like-minded people, seekers of truth, and a higher level of consciousness. That is newrealities.com. And just a little announcement on that. On tomorrow, December 12th, I will be presenting, Alan Steinfeld, that's me, the teachings of Swami Kaleshwar, because he was an interesting master I met in India, and he'll be, won't be in New York, but some of his students will be in New York at the Meta Center. That's 214 West 29th Street on the 16th floor, starting at 7 p.m. To pre-register for that, go to 212-462-9257. There's also a lot of other interesting events happening coming up. I'll just go through some of the highlights. If you want to spend a New Realities New Year, you're welcome to join me, Alan Steinfeld, and the Vistar Foundation for a three-day retreat in Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires there. And that will be the creativity of group awakening, a celebration of innovation and new possibilities. This will be December 30th to the 1st. To find out more about that, please call 203-968-1995. Yes, that's the number to call. That should be a really fantastic retreat and a great way to start the New Year's celebration. One more thing before I announce my guest is that one of my favorite teachers, Adnan Sahan, is going to be in New York. He's a Sufi teacher, and he's giving a beautiful workshop on relaxation and dance, and he will be giving that workshop from the 22nd to January 1st, a whole, 10-day retreat there in Brooklyn. For more information about that, call 212-228-2459. Okay, if you want to know about any other types of events that are going on, just tune into newrealities.com, newrealities.com, and there's a whole list of things. If you have something that I haven't mentioned on that website, please email me, newrealities@earthlink.net, and I will add that to the whole mix of December. We're going into 2008, which should be an interesting year. 2008, only 4 years before what the Mayans said is the end of time in 2012. I'll be having some more programs on that in the upcoming weeks. 2012, the end of time. The end of time as we know it, as people like Terrence McKenna and Jose Aguayo said. I'll also be doing workshops on what that means to be faced with the end of time as we know it. Does it mean that the paradigms of reality shift? Well, I think so. I think contact with other beings on other dimensional realities will become more of an everyday occurrence, and I think we will really shift into new realities as the as we move beyond 2012 and, you know, as we come together as a planetary civilization, which is really what this program's about. How do we come together collectively to express each other's individuality? That sort of leads me into my guest, who I'll be speaking with shortly. Frank Wildman will be the guest coming up, and we're going to be talking about how to change your age, how to change the perspectives on who you think you are in relationship to your body, and how do we tap into our greater potential. If you were listening last week, I did a whole program with Frank on the history of the human potential movement, and you can find that in the archives at bbsradio.com. Go to the archives page, look under New Realities, and then look under last Tuesday's show, which was December 4th, under New Realities, and that's the show I did with Frank, where he really laid out the foundation of a new paradigm that's based on the evolution of consciousness and the history of this contemporary experience, how we're tapping into a higher levels of who we are, a more integrated potential. Also, a little background about Frank. He is a Feldenkrais practitioner. He runs the FeldenkraisInstitute.org. You can look up that. He also has a bunch of books out there. We, in some upcoming shows, we might actually talk about the evolution and history of sex and sexual development. He is a very interesting scholar in a lot of different fields. I'm just waiting for him to come on the line in a few minutes. And we also might take some phone calls. So if you're on the website, the bbsradio.com website, there is a phone number. So once we get into the conversation, give us about 20 minutes or so to get into the conversation. And then you, if you have a question, you might just call into the station. If you're also looking at that archive page, I'm interested in whether other comments people might have about some of the other programs I've done over the last, since March, really. I've done a series of programs on BBS Radio, ranging from environmental to consciousness to healing to sexuality, to alternative forms of spirituality, really. And I think that's probably the theme. If you're going to look at the overall theme of my programs, it has been a look at alternative ways of looking at who we are in relationship to body, mind, spirit. And that can all be found in the history of this series on the archives. And if you want to actually look at some of the television broadcasts separate from the radio shows, you can go to newrealities.tv, because this program really began as a television show based on Time Warner Cable in Manhattan, and you can still see that in Manhattan, Channel 57, every Monday night at 9 p.m. And that is simulcast on mnn.org, 9 p.m., Channel 57. Also, some of those interviews are actually up on YouTube. I'm sure everybody knows YouTube. It is the current hottest medium that we've evolved into. YouTube, YOUTUBE.com. If you do /New Realities, you'll see about 75 programs that are presented there with leading edge guests that are talking about creating new paradigms. So we should be having Frank on the line, and what we'll be talking about with Frank Wildman tonight is how to change your age, and that should be a very interesting show because Frank's coming from a very multifaceted background, and let's just see if we have him on the line. Seth, how are we doing on our connection? Seth from BBS Radio, do you hear me? We're looking for Frank Wildman.
Yes, it is. We're getting him on now.
Okay, thanks, Seth. How to change your age, or changing your age with Frank Wildman. Just stay tuned for 1 minute, and Frank will be here. We'll probably talk for about 45 minutes, and we will be taking questions. You can also email any questions later on to newrealities@earthlink.net. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and I definitely welcome comments and opinions, criticism I'll even welcome, and whatever ideas that you might have about upcoming shows, I'm also open to that as well. So, Frank, are you there?
I'm there. How are you?
Okay. Good. Thanks for being a return guest. This is exciting. So I've already sort of announced you and talked about the topic, which is how to change your age. Is that right?
That's what it's called, yes. Everyone can do that, and most people don't realize they can do that.
Yeah, I mean, is this a little background? Is this coming out of your studies as a Feldenkrais practitioner, or where is this coming from?
Out of my studies as a psychologist, as a Feldenkrais practitioner, as someone who's worked with people for 30 years and more to see what effects different things have on their lives. And for me, the difference between feeling younger and moving and being functionally younger or being older, it lies in how effortlessly we move.
Great. I love this. Okay, let's jump in. What is the first thing we have to know about reversing our age or feeling younger?
Well, one of the things is to find a way to reverse the resistance that we have in our movements. And that resistance you see in people and often identify as old or somebody who's working too hard. So,
uh-huh.
For example, some people go to the gym to get a buffed look, but they look a little stiff walking down the street. Their trunks don't move.
Right.
You know, they're working with resistance, and so their body shows that resistance.
Is it this stiffness that actually kills people eventually, this non-fluidity of physicality?
No.
Okay.
I think that to be older, and what it means to age is to dry up, finally. I'm thinking of it not in a metaphorical sense, just simply you see the resistance.
Uh-huh.
And thickness and density in a body. And as someone gets older, if they don't learn to move more easily, then what happens is the resistances from years and years of habits, bad habits, mm-hmm. old injuries, all of these things, get them to be fixed in their habits. And then it creates a resistance pattern so that it feels effortful to do almost anything. And then finally people give up their dreams. They give up like, I don't want to dance, I can't do that anymore. I like to go for a nice long walk with my friends, but can't do that anymore.
Mm.
Oh, I wish I could play tennis like I did. That kind of stuff.
So what do we do? How do we change that resistance?
Well, the first way is by learning. And the best way to learn in terms of movement, because that's what I'm addressing, is to learn to do what children do. The way that children do it. So most people, when they think of, say, going to the gym, think of sort of linear exercises of different kinds that you perform with different machinery and equipment, whatever, or floor work of different kinds. It could even be forms of yoga.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things that people rarely think of doing is laying on the floor and literally playing with yourself. I mean,
you don't
lay there. Like a child would, and go, you know, how do I explore or play with my arm and my leg and my left hand and the right backside of my cheek?
Really?
And how do I do that? How would I get myself to sit in 15 different ways? And that's not the style of thinking that people have as they become adults, because they get too concerned with doing everything the right way.
You're saying lay on the floor and just start to re-examine your body in its movement? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, what you do and the kind of work I do is you examine very systematically how you might do a simple thing like rolling. I used to teach a course on rolling at the University of California in their movement exploration labs, and we would take people and put them through 20 classes or 20 hours worth of different sections on rolling. And every time they would roll, it would be completely new. It would be something, finally, in ways that they never thought of, that you would involve in rolling.
Rolling? You could
lead, let's say you were lying on your back, and somebody said, could you roll over to your left?
Mm.
Well, you could lead by turning your head, and sort of spiral, like your head would go, and then your pelvis would go, and then finally your legs would go. Or you could lead with your feet.
Mm.
Or could lead with the middle of yourself, your pelvis. So those would be three ways. Learning how to do that. But supposing somebody gave you instructions like, you can't push anything into the floor. No pushing into the floor. You can roll any way you want to, but the game is you can't push into the floor. Well, people don't realize how much they push their heel down into the floor or push something down into the floor.
Uh-huh.
If they could, they'd grab a hold of the rug and pull on it.
So what so do they do if
almost
you
anything,
can't... So without that resistance of the floor, then how do you generate movement, an internal movement, you're saying, or something, right?
Well, you're generating movements that are against the floor. They are using the floor, but in a way that's very easy, very soft, very subtle. And what one feels in doing it is the clarity of how your body can move and how easy you can roll over, how easily. And also the number of ways you can create. So people can say, it hurts me to roll over on my left side because my shoulder hurt. My left shoulder was hurt. Well, there's a lot of ways you could hurt yourself lying on your shoulder and a lot of ways that you wouldn't. So it's a matter of how would a person learn how they could do basic activities like that and not hurt themselves.
So this will start to loosen up people's resistance, this stiffness, this tightening. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what you begin to do is loosen up and open a person's physical imagination, kind of unlock the mysteries of their own body-mind.
Physical imagination, that's such an important point. The physical imagination, the body-mind, these are things exactly that people forget about as they grow up and lose contact, essentially, with their body. Go into that a little more, physical imagination.
Well, most of the time, people would like to be told what to do in a very simple way. So, it could be a calisthenic approach to things, a gym approach, whatever it is. It could be, not to pick on any one group, it could be that you're told, put your breath below your belly and keep your attention there. Nonetheless, you're being told what to do. And there's an idea that certain things will happen, certain things might not happen. But there's an idea of what to do with your body.
Right.
There are numerous breathing exercises from around the world.
Right.
But very few people think, well, how would I explore breathing? Now, for example, in the Feldenkrais method, we have about 55 hours worth of lessons, 55 separate lessons that take about that long, that deal with breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are all explorations.
Mm.
So I've taken some of these. It's too much, huh? It's almost too much. But
well, it's amazing that there is that sophisticated. So you've taken a bunch of those and condensed that then?
I've condensed many lessons down into a form that people could use that would give them some of the benefits of the Feldenkrais method, which is that sense of ease, lightness, and a playfulness of mind. And a sense, a willingness to explore rather than a searching for what would be the right way to do something.
But you're still telling people what to do, right? I mean, or you is this a way of allowing them to explore for themselves, the breathing?
It's a way of allowing them to explore for themselves what would be the right thing to do the next movement.
So you want to go through
so
a little
much,
bit?
It's very much like a puzzle.
You're starting to reveal a deeper puzzle of who we are as physical beings here.
Mm-hmm. And if you feel this and you can move that, then you can go on to the next step.
So do you want to give us an example of what that would be? sample? Or
sure. Well, tell me this. Are your listeners most likely seated at a chair, do you think, by a computer? Or what does the situation be of your audience?
I would say they're probably sitting in a chair somewhere, listening, maybe laying down, perhaps. But I think they're pretty much sitting. I'd say most people are sitting somewhere. Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting. I say you're probably sitting, aren't you, or no?
Well, I get up and move around. See, I don't have to be stuck in the station.
Right. Right. So, I don't know. Let's say people are sitting. Then what? Okay.
So here's a simple thing that people could do.
Yeah.
Take your hands, both hands, and place them on your forehead, and put your elbows in front of yourself on your desk, or on your knees, if you don't have a desk.
Okay.
So it's as if you take the palm of your hands, right? And you just put the palms of your hands on your forehead.
Okay.
Your fingers would be more or less up into your hair.
Okay.
Now, if you're at a desk, it's a very convenient place to lean. And you can just lean on your elbows. And while you're leaning on your elbows, let your head's weight go into your hands. Make sure that both hands are bearing half the weight of your head.
Okay.
And now, while you're there, lift up just your right elbow and see, how do you do it? Like you were a kid and you were just trying to figure out, how did you do things? So you lifted up your right elbow attached to your head, the hand attached to your head, right? And you set it down. Now notice what happens in your legs.
Uh-huh.
When you lift up your right elbow, do you use your legs?
No, I don't think I've used my... No, I'm just using my elbow.
I'm not actually using my elbow.
What?
Try the left side and see what happens if you lift the left side and see if there's a difference between the way you lift up your left elbow compared to the way you were lifting your right elbow.
Yeah, there seems to be a different sensation. Yeah, I feel a different something. I don't have a word to articulate it.
Okay, so that's good enough. You don't need to be able to articulate our sensations that well, but at least you feel that there's a difference. So look, rest both hands on your forehead again and rest both elbows down again. And now, could you lift both elbows? And when you lift both elbows, can you feel that you do use your legs?
I also feel my neck comes into play somehow.
Mm-hmm.
The back of my neck seems to be involved in that. In that movement as well, somehow. I mean, to bring sensation or awareness to my body, I'm feeling it in the neck, which I didn't expect to feel it in the neck, lifting.
Uh-huh.
So that's an awareness I didn't have before. And in my legs, I can see how my legs sort of drop down as I lift my elbows up.
Do you feel your legs push into the floor?
Yeah, they sort of drop. Yeah, that's another awareness I wasn't conscious of before.
Most people have no idea how much they need their legs when they're sitting to move their arms. It's one of the major reasons why people get certain forms of repetitive strain injuries, but that's another issue.
Well, it's related.
What you could do with your legs, an interesting thing to do with your legs would be to bend your knees while you're sitting in your chair so that your toes or the tops of your feet even are on the floor, more or less in back of you.
The tops of my feet are behind.
Yeah, so you bend your knees really strongly, and you would probably find only the tips of your shoes.
Right.
And if you don't have shoes on, it would be people who would find that the tops of their toes and their toenails would be on the floor.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, if you sit like that, and then you put your hands on your forehead, and you place the forehead resting its weight on the hands, and you let the elbows rest on your desktop or your knees, and you lift up your arms, both elbows off of your knees at once, you'll feel immediately how much you relied on your legs.
Yeah.
So one gets to discover that.
Does that make us more flexible in general? Just that different awareness of our movement?
Well, your spine would become more flexible, and you'd become more coordinated just playing with movements like that, just like I'm describing, than it would be to bend over in some regimented way to, let's say, have some daily idea that if I bend forwards and stretch, I'll improve something. Or if I did some sort of forwards exercise, you could do whatever through simple exploration and play. And when it's structured like this, make discoveries that you'd never notice otherwise because you'd be too busy doing the right thing.
Right. I mean, just look at the society we've created where we hardly have to move at all. We sit at a desk, we sit in a car, we sit on a couch at home. I mean, it's a pretty stationary society. I mean, the body almost is just an appendage to move your head around on. And we've totally almost lost all connection, except if you go to the gym where you just exercise that vehicle for your head for about, an hour or so. It just seems so ridiculous. We're missing out on a whole range of human experience and possibilities and probably intelligences and geniuses that can be born out of a greater exploration of movement. Would you agree?
Well, yes. In fact, my trademark for my work is the intelligent body.
Uh-huh.
And that's really what the idea is. So, for example, if you now put your feet back on the floor in a place where they felt more solid, you would know, without anyone telling you, where a place would be that's more solid. Your body made an intelligent discovery, and you probably would explore spontaneously a different place to put your feet so that you could easily lift your elbows and carry your head up.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
You
do that because you felt something new. You felt that you do use your legs and you use them in a very specific way, and your body's intelligence will call that out and make use of it.
Well, you're probably very valuable in office, protocol where people can call you into their office and prevent office based injuries like, carpal tunnel and things like that. Are you doing that work as well with some people, offices, businesses?
I don't have time for such things. I wish I did, if there were only more time.
Right. So, but does that...
I do have a book that I've written.
Tell us about that.
And it's called A Busy Person's Guide to Ease Your Movement. And it is obtainable on our website, but it was originally published in German. Because the German publishing company really wanted something that would help office workers, and so they wanted a book that would focus sitting lessons.
So, but is this really the basis for reversing the aging? This type of movement, or does it go deeper into other types of specialized movements to reverse aging? Where can we go?
No, I'm mentioning that because I have a book of lessons that involve sitting, and one can go online and even get them one by one.
Where do we go online? Just tell us.
The Feldenkrais Institute.
.org.
Yeah.
Yes, Feldenkrais, and they could get that, order that book online.
Feldenkraisinstitute.org, and that's FeldenKrais.
Okay, great. So to just...
you can buy just one by one sitting lessons.
Great.
And,
So you've outlined it a little bit, but this flexibility, this getting over the stiffness by using our bodies more, what else can we do to start to bring an awareness of all the time to that?
To which?
To, bring an awareness to how to remain more flexible in who we are, in our totality. How do we start to really bring that awareness all the time to everything we do to help reverse the stiffness that causes aging in people?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that is very well known is, and a lot of good research is being done on this right there in New York and as well as other parts of the world, which is what can be done to reverse the process of aging in the brain and the idea that your brain sort of inevitably deteriorates at a certain speed.
Yeah, okay.
And a lot of research, there's a man, Elkanon Goldberg, in New York. I think he's
Elkanon Goldberg?
Elkanon Goldberg. I believe he's with Columbia.
Okay.
And is it Columbia or NYU? I'm not certain. But Elkanon has done considerable research on the subject of puzzle solving and working at computer terminals and just the very things that supposedly get us in trouble.
But for the brain, right?
Faster and learn to see patterns and solve visual problems, which means your brain is always is working to form and reform new things around you. And so this seems to functionally changes the way that the brain works. And now we know it's not just that you functionally, I use the word functionally, I mean that you can see faster and more, or that you could through these exercises that I have in my books, in the Feldenkrais method, that you can learn to move more easily.
Uh-huh.
It's more than that. It's that you actually are changing the neurons in your brain.
How's that? Yes.
Well, it used to be thought that you were born with a certain number of neurons, nerve cells, in your brain.
Right.
And that's the number. Like, you were handed that number at birth, and that's it. It was all downhill from there in a way, in that they progressively they wore out and died, and then you
right.
had no more juice left.
Right.
And that was that. But then, some years ago, I believe it was here at the University of California, a group, actually one of the people was Marion Diamond, a microanatomist, who she discovered in rats' brains, if they were stimulated to find new pathways to run in. Like, in other words, if you went in the same way to find the cheese all the time and you always got it, your brain didn't have to form any new pathways for its own circuitry.
Mm.
So she discovered that on autopsies of rats, that the ones that had been stimulated to find new ways to do things, new ways to find the cheese,
mm-hmm.
that they, in fact, had more neural connections, more mm-hmm. interconnections. In their brain.
A greater intelligence, in a sense, as well, right? Because the neural connections...
A kind of greater intelligence, yeah.
Huh.
And leading to that possibility. And then much research was done after that, because it was a shocking realization. And then, later on, came discoveries that, in any case, our brains are quite plastic. And in the sense that they change, it's not a matter that it's all downhill. But you could add new connections to your brain at any age.
Uh-huh.
And by adding new connections in the internal circuitry of your brain, it's as if you had more of a brain. If you don't make in your life too many interconnections neurologically, because you're always thinking the same old things and you're always doing the same old things, then in your body is always also doing the same old things, then it really doesn't make any difference what you do. You're not using the full potential of yourself.
Right. So the creative individual is the one that's developing new connections, and bringing that creativity into your movement and into your body creates a greater human potential. It makes sense what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So stimulating that somehow, or going for it, or...
So yes, and when people are involved in that process on a regular basis, they decide that what they want to do is move in new ways. They want to find new ways to move.
Mm.
Not to do this or to do that, but find new ways to move. That when they're involved in that process, that they're reforming themselves, and they're creating new connections in the brain, which is just as good as having more new brain.
Huh. That's great. I haven't heard that before. But that makes a lot of sense. It really does. And so how do we stimulate new creative modes of thinking? How do we just to stay a little bit with that? How do we think new and different thoughts? How do we activate the creative potential in our brains?
Well, first of all, I some of the things that I've been suggesting.
Yes.
One of the things that one could do in movement is to try to find ways to have a fresh approach to every movement, rather than, for example, concentrating very hard on a way that you're moving and closing your focus in on the movement that you're doing. Change the way the movement is done altogether and explore it again like a child.
So get out of the routine.
A child is doing this all the time. A child doesn't put its hands to its mouth or think, what's the most efficient way I'm going to bring my food to my mouth? A child is exploring every possible way that they could play with the distance between their hands and their mouth, and every possible way their fingers could fit in their mouth. they're just everything. And then finally, they're trying, let's leave my hands here, and I'll just bring my mouth to my hands, and they'll play with moving their mouth to their hands and see if they can get their fingers into their mouth that way. And so there's always something new going on. It's continuously new. And during that period of our life, we know that our brains are expanding enormously, and interneuronal nerve cell connections are being forged constantly. Again, I'm suggesting to think like that and move like that, because that is a way of regaining what we would think of as some of our lost vitality, agility, and physical intelligence that we may have had when we were younger.
Yeah, there's some quote by Einstein where he says, what our task is to accomplish is what we feel we can hardly actually do. You know, the hardest thing we can do is what we're here to achieve, you know, to push ourselves beyond the realms of our comfortability into our things we can barely grasp. You know, he says, go for that. I mean, that was Einstein's advice, you know. So I think he probably had a pretty creative, agile brain, because he was like a child, you know. He was wondering at the universe. He was wondering, how did things work? I mean, he took what you were saying about the body and thinking and applied it to the physical laws of the universe, in a sense. So, yes.
Yes, and also in his own discoveries. For example, finding the theory of relativity for him wasn't just a mental abstraction. To conceive of the idea, he wrote about sitting in a chair and realizing, trying to realize what it is that he needed to formulate, literally formulate in mathematical terms. And he was getting an image of the idea, and he felt himself becoming cold and shaky. And then he felt himself become hot, and he had perspiration on his forehead, and he felt all these sensations, and he wasn't sure what was going on. He thought maybe he was getting ill or dizzy. Mm-hmm. This was all within a few minutes.
Right.
And then he stood up out of the chair, and he walked over to his desk with his notebook and pen, and he felt hesitant and at the same time certain.
Mm-hmm.
And then he began to put pen to paper and was just able to formulate the theory of relativity.
Huh. What was going on in
his body? His body needed to find something.
His body needed to find something, you said?
Well, his body was involved in the process.
So his body was actually almost, if you want to be a little abstract, shifting a frequency so we can access something unknown, in a sense. A new understanding of reality. His body was adjusting, sounds like to me, another frequency of being. Does that make sense, or am I...
Well, that's a little abstract for me, frequencies of being.
Okay.
It's just, I think the point that to be made here is that aging happens to all living creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everything ages, so it happens. But anybody, could be more in charge of your own aging by moving more freely. And you could have some, what might be critical control over the natural process of aging. And many, many people who have worked with me have discovered that habits of movement and of posture, of breathing, that has led to sometimes a lifetime of stress and pain, and that can be changed, that can be altered, kind of moderated, or even disappear. And then you feel younger and functionally again. You will be younger. You'll be able to do things that you may have found more difficult, and take up new events and sports and dance and games that you might not have for some time. You know, people stop doing things after a while, and they often don't really ask themselves why they don't, like, go ski again. You know, somebody might say, well, and I had a knee injury. Well, okay, but that you know, your injury doesn't mean you can't ski now. You had it then, you know.
Right. So how do you look at you? How do you live your life? Do you sort of forget your own age? Have you forgotten your own age and it just totally go by your feeling? I mean, how do you live day to day, if you don't mind sharing?
Well, you know, if I continuously did forget my own age, then I suppose I'd have to really regard myself as need to work on this some. Fortunately,
right.
I do remember my age.
No, but you don't pay any attention to your you know, however old, and you have to feel this way, you know, like I'm sure a lot of people you know, because I know people in their 40s who think they're old, or even in their 30s. It's ridiculous, the mental concepts that people put on themselves when they come to what I think is an artificial, imposed defining of time. It seems such like an arbitrary counting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
But they're right. You see, a lot of people actually are quite old in the sense of they're quite stiff and inflexible in their attitudes and in their body. They're very narrow in their scope of interests, and their lifestyle is extremely uninteresting, but it's safe. And in that way, they have gotten older. And so, you know, we feel this. This can often show up in a person's tissues when you're handling them or having them move. We handle people a lot in my work, so. People who would come to a Feldenkrais practitioner, for example, would find that they'd be giving them a private lesson in movement. And that private lesson in movement would probably involve touch, so that you could help the person to feel something that they couldn't feel before.
Mm-hmm.
And right there says a lot of things. What happens to somebody if they can feel something they never felt before?
Right.
I'll give you an example. I had a client many years ago who was really only curious about what effect this work would have on her, because she knew so many older people and who were benefiting from it. And, and she thought, "Oh, it's interesting. I keep sending." She was a lawyer, and she said, "I keep sending clients whose estates I'm looking after for to this guy, and." You know, they get better.
Right.
You know, that's really interesting. And functionally, they're able to do things that they couldn't do earlier in their life.
Right.
I wonder what's going on. So I'll see what it is, you know. And so she made an appointment, didn't have any particular complaints. She had no particular physical illnesses, difficulties, you know, that kind of thing. She was just curious. And okay, so we explored some movements together and showing her how this and that worked in her body, kind of like you were teaching anatomy to somebody,
right.
You know, having them feel it.
Right.
And she got up off the table and said, "Thank you very much." And she walked out to her car, and I thought, well, that's it, you know, that's the end of it.
Mm.
But now she's had her curiosity satisfied. And then she called me up the next day and said, "This work you're doing is very dangerous." And I said, "Yes, it could be, but why do you think it's dangerous?"
Yeah.
"You know, I have a really happy life. I have a really great relationship with my husband, and I have a great job, and I have a lot of friends, and I'm in good health, as you noticed. And after the lesson, all through the night and into today, I'm starting to realize that I've lived a very mechanical life.
Mm.
And I've lived a life to avoid pain and distress. And I really don't love my husband at all. And a lot of my friends are people who I'm really not that close with at all. And that I don't know who I could even talk to about things like this.
Hmm. So you woke her up a little bit. Yeah.
All she had was, you know, a new way to feel something, and she felt more.
Huh.
So
perhaps
it's not
this,
hugely untypical.
But this is a hope maybe that we need for our planet. I mean, if we, you know, if we can feel more, perhaps this disposable society of, you know, drinking your little plastic bottle and throwing it away and not feeling connected, all that can change as this kind of work gets people more connected to bigger feelings of who they are and their connection to their bodies. I mean, I think it's very important work. I don't think it's dangerous. I think the other way is actually dangerous. The stiff, you know, tight, narrow view, that's dangerous. I'm sure you agree because it's your work, but it's like, you know, that's what I would tell that person. She's living a dangerous life by not doing the kind of work you're inviting her to do.
Well, she changed the way she lived after that. She made a choice.
Oh,
so a lot of people do. And a lot of people find, I think, as they might have... the example I give my students, and a lot of them are students who are very involved in things like Pilates and yoga, mm-hmm. and taking various classes and courses in let's call it general body-mind improvement.
Yeah.
That there can be something so excellent that, like if you are a wine taster and you have a great glass of wine, you really enjoy wine, but you don't know that much about it. You're studying it. And you have a great glass of wine, and it fills your mouth, and it's so incredible that you not only want more of it, but all of a sudden, all the wines you've ever had taste really bland, and you can't
right.
imagine that you ever enjoyed them.
Right.
And how you did.
Right.
And the same thing is true, of course, with food. We can have tastes of food that are just so extraordinary that they change what we're... what we think of as food, you know, what we think a certain kind of food should taste like. There's anyone who's even had just a simple thing as a fresh, really fresh peach picked off a tree, just,
yeah.
you know, just ripe at the right time. And you have that peach picked off a tree at just the right time when it's ripe. Wow. Where will you ever get a peach that incredible again?
I know exactly what you mean. So this freshness of movement, this creativity of the mind, this new adventure of the world, it does mean getting out of our safety zone, out of the predictability of the day-to-day existence, and embracing the unknown, which every artist does in order to create something new. They go into the unknown. And I think that's why we're here. I mean, I had a spiritual teacher who said we are here to make known the unknown. That's our purpose for incarnating. And you're just bringing that back into the body, which I think is a very important point. To keep us alive, to get us fresh and young, just keep your body moving in creative new ways without going into routine.
So Change Your Age is a program that I developed just for that purpose, that people could understand and relate to the idea of aging as something that, again, they have some control over, that there's something they can do about it. And what they can do about it is more than, and certainly different than, mechanical activities. You know, like everybody knows that you can lose weight by eating less, probably.
Yeah.
Or you can exercise more, burn more calories, whatever, and also build more muscle mass, and you'll become stronger and lose weight. And, you know, these are well-known mechanical features of our physiology.
Right.
But that's different than also going, and you can have a really interesting and fun time doing this by learning how you could eat in a different way, learning how you could move in a new ways, learning how you could create and explore in ordinary situations.
Well,
it changes one's mind, and it changes one's age.
Give us a brief example. I mean, because we're almost out of time. Just how to change your idea of eating. You don't mean eating different foods. You mean actually eating in a different way. I think that's what you mean, right?
Well, yes. Again, you know, people might you might want to think of just again mechanically eat less of something, and whether you feel like it or not, or you could think posturally. How are you associated to your food? How are you related to your food?
Oh.
And some people might decide to hover over their food and as if it's going to be taken from them at any moment and shovel it down, you know, just get ready to eat a large portion of food fast.
Yeah.
And it takes a while for the brain to even detect that you've taken in so much food. And,
right.
And you've already eaten too much, much more than you need. But sometimes we can just physically use the movement of eating by going, add a new movement to eating, like, I'll sit back in my chair and separate my physical body from my utensils that I use instead of my fingers, right? So I'll separate myself from them. And then I'll move my body back again, pick the utensils up again, and start eating again, and make that a constant act, the separation from the utensils, and a postural separation that's required.
Uh-huh.
And then to have to move forwards and pick something up slows down your eating naturally.
Huh.
And by doing that, people find they eat less because clearly they discover that you don't need a huge portion of food. You already feel full.
Wow.
And by the way, your digestion will improve too because you aren't eating so fast.
Wow. You're just giving me inspirations for everything, Frank. I mean... no, go ahead, because I'm getting
so,
a lot.
So these kinds of things are you know, for many people would be new and creative ways of living and acting that would make life more playful and interesting. There are thousands of things that you could do with the inside of your mouth and jaw and tongue while you're eating that are actually fun. things that people don't even realize their children do all the time, their babies and young children.
And also the topic we touched on last week, I even think sexual expression could be a lot more fun and creative in that same way as we're dealing with another person. Does it go? Do you go there as well?
Well, you know, today, in the last few decades only, really, the idea that there is such a thing as sexual expression is new. I mean, we can say sexual expression, and pretty much everybody would know what you're talking about at one time. And still, in much of the world, if you said, I need to express myself sexually, or sex is an expression of my feelings, people wouldn't know what you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
Sex was something that you did because you either needed to, or you needed to because that's how you had children, was through sex.
Right. Or you wanted to get or have some kind of a hormonal release in your body.
Yeah. There would be an understood need to have some form of sexual activity, but the idea that it would be playful or geared towards expression of the self is a fairly new idea. I mean, most people don't, you know, add to their vows when they're getting married, for example. Most people don't say, you know, and I hope that we can help each other be more sexually expressive, you know, even today.
But if you were going to add some of these creative movements into a sexual expression, what would you suggest to a couple?
Well, there are. I could just tell you that one could start with the so many lessons that are available in the Feldenkrais method that teach ways that you could move your pelvis and that most people would have never thought of, and uses and ways of controlling the perineum, the bottom of our pelvis, the muscles at the bottom of the pelvis, and so, you know, there's a lot, and again breathing, you know, so
breathing.
There's a lot of things that that people could do, and I, which I don't know.
No, that's a whole other show. But I just wanted to touch on that. Touch on that because it just seemed like, you know, we're talking about thinking and eating and sitting and all the automatic behaviors that, and that was just another, I think, a very important use of energy is that element of us, you know, it goes along with everything. I didn't want to ignore, like, a very, because I know you're also, you've studied that, that's sort of an expertise of yours as well. I think the first lecture I heard of you was about the evolution of sexuality. I think that's what you called it, right? I mean,
Well, yes, it was in the evolution of sexuality which, yes, leads to endless amounts of creativity. Or,
right.
For many people, sexuality leads to its own world of pain and darkness. So, you know.
Right, like everything I think you've mentioned, food could lead to its own world of pain and darkness, you know, sitting
absolutely.
At a desk. So what I think you're reminding us all about, and as we grow younger, is to keep creating, keep inventing new ways of moving and never go into an automatic behavior, it seems like you're saying.
I wouldn't say it that way, because I think that it's not a good idea to give people rules about things like
okay.
that.
How would you say it?
It ends up almost like one should be more creative and playful, you know.
Right. No one wants to be told that.
I think it's more a matter of creating situations that are more allowing of people to do that and provide the freedoms to express themselves and to move in new ways by encouraging new movement. And I think encouraging is showing people how they might do it is helpful. So
how do you do that then? I mean, how would you suggest? I mean,
well, I think people concretely should try out some of the things that I already have. That because it's very hard to get access to me. I end up flying all over the world, but also people can have taste of what I'm doing and do it by just going to my website and getting something from our store, and
right.
where they can get. DVD programs containing lessons on how to strengthen and stabilize the core of your body in ways that would be, it seems to be, very stimulating and exciting for people who do that in the world of physical education and Pilates work and things like that. Programs for older adults,
huh.
One of which is called Improving with Age, that being kind of a core concept. Improving with age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Where you see people improving as they go through the lessons that you follow, you do with them. They're like half-hour-long TV shows, basically.
Mm. Well, so people want
to
find
website, and they can, you know, then also people can try a whole new idea, which is that you would learn through words being and just descriptions, as I did on the program earlier when I was saying, put your forehead on your hands, feel the weight of your head, put your elbows on your knees. See, most of the work that I'm talking about is audio or tactile,
mm-hmm.
because people can't. It's hard for people to sense and feel things. It's easy to see and imitate as best as you can, which means you're already moving the way you know how to.
Right.
So, you know, if somebody does something and shows it to you, it's like, well, I can do it as well as I already know how to move. So we're talking here about a different kind of movement than that.
Uh-huh.
And in that sense, it's more internal.
Uh-huh.
It can't be produced by imitation. It can only be produced by understanding.
And going inside yourself, yeah.
Yeah. So, for example, if you think just sitting on your chair right now, if you think, well, which side of my pelvis is sitting more heavily? If I had a scale under each buttock, which one would read higher? Which scale? Most people don't know. They can sit, like, for their whole life, you know, in front of a computer, and then go home and sit, and they sit in their car, and then they go, yeah, and they sit around at dinner, and then they sit down and relax, and, you know, whatever. But they can do this all the time and not notice that there's one side that's heavier than the other, and that's connected to things about the way that they walk, and that it's connected to the way that they breathe, and the way that they might have habits in sports that they play, or, you know, or activities that they're doing that involve whole body movement.
So by becoming aware of how they're sitting, it could change the way they walk and could possibly decrease likelihood of an injury or
all those things.
Like
all those things. But the big news is that in order to follow something through hearing, through an audio guided program, means that you have to understand. Because no one's going to show you what's right and wrong. There's no one there to look at. So even though I have programs on DVD, there's also, if the people wanted to really go into this, they could simply get the Intelligent Body CD series and put themselves through 24 movement lessons, like a whole home program, which by now thousands of people have done all over the world. And the Intelligent Body gives full-out Feldenkrais lessons, and people can experience what this is like to be able to hear something described so clearly that you can actually do it. And yet, sometimes you do it and go, I couldn't have imagined it.
Huh.
Movements that I couldn't have imagined. It. You know, I find out I'm doing it.
The audio guides lead to more of a tactile intelligence. Because it's audio that we have to feel into it?
Yes, it's a more kinesthetic intelligence, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because you have there's no way to understand anything or produce anything unless you feel it.
Uh-huh.
So it's different than visual imitation. But I do have DVD programs because it has all that audio, but it also can help people who really are confused and lost, and then they can see it.
So wait, the visual component then would give people more of an intellectual understanding and an imitation, so they actually are less connected to their body, I think is what you're saying here. You know,
That there are different ways of learning, and visual imitation of a movement fires different cells in the brain and doesn't require that you change how you move, because you're imitating what you already know. You're seeing someone do it, and you can either do it or you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, you're doing what you already know.
I see. But the audio guide allows a kind of creative response within the body itself to activate its own original way of moving.
Mm. So, for example, and when people go to classes and courses with practitioners of the Feldenkrais method, they're talked to or they're touched, but rarely would someone show them what to do.
Oh.
And that's something, for example, that's really quite different from most of the popular forms of exercise today. It's the most significant difference is that there's a primacy in hearing, and making hearing a prime factor is interesting, because if people can't hear, then you could always show them.
Mm-hmm. So when hearing becomes a primacy,
because of how you move and differently than when you're going by visual imitation.
Because it seems most people learn by visual imitation. They learn how to ski, for instance. It's like you don't quite know how to, you know, move those skis back and forth until you actually see someone and sort of duplicate the sensation in your body. If someone was to tell you how to do it, I think it might be harder than in some cases like skiing than to just do it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and that's all. That's also awareness isn't something that you can imitate, and it's not something that you can duplicate by just observing someone.
Right.
Like, for example, many people in theater are very able to take on a character who's extremely confident and calm and focused, and take the character on and perform many dimensions of the character's life, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the actor has achieved certain kinds of realizations, learned certain internal skills, etc., that the actor has.
Right.
And,
right.
Of course, where these kinds of things show up most clearly are in films that are made where the martial arts of some sort are being used, in, because the actor, it all has to be choreographed for acting, or it has to be done with the assumption that the martial artist would know how to avoid getting kicked or punched or wounded. And so the filming and the setting of it is different.
So to sum up, because you've touched on so many important points about creativity and movement and the agility of the mind and all that, and then also your series that people can get the intelligent body movement series from the website. Your website is Feldenkrais Institute. That's Feldenkrais, FeldenKrais Institute.org. And but to sum it up, because of course we've just spent a lot of time going over. But what would you like to leave people with to start to activate them in changing their body? I mean, if you want to just reiterate, or if there's a point.
Sure, to activate people to begin on the idea of changing your age. I'd say the first thing is to pick a period of time that you'd like to be younger. Like, be reasonable, you know. Like, you can be 10 years younger. You can. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I've seen hundreds of people do this all over the world. And you do that by deciding that you're going to take up activities that will engender that where you can become 10 years younger.
Like, so, what kind of activities?
So when you learn new ways to move, well, what I want to leave the audience with is to first start thinking of what age do they want to be? What does it mean to be older? What does it mean to be younger?
Yeah.
I think the exploration has to be there. And it can be, you know, funny, it could be a laughable kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of jokes about it. But at the same time, there are usually specific functional things that people want out of youth. And so, you know, what is the desire of youth? And it's not very smart to do this if you go, well, I'm 55 now and I'd like to be 25.
Right.
I mean, be reasonable, you know. Take 10 years younger.
Right. Start there anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So that I'd like to leave people knowing that when you learn new ways to move, your brain will generate new cells. You'll regenerate your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And as you become more aware of how you move, your brain will form more connections. Make more, like, shake hands and make more greetings between its neurons. And you can learn to move like you solve puzzles or play games. And you became more enabled, as you do this, you become more enabled to think with your body. And as you become more aware of how you move and grow a larger brain, you'll become more intelligent in your body. And you'll literally increase your body intelligence.
And that's
something that is extremely important to not lose as we get older.
Yeah, thank you.
And it can't be addressed through mechanical exercises alone.
And definitely people should go to your website, FeldenkraisInstitute.org, to find out the products they can get by and activate this body intelligence. Thank you.
But I'll spell Feldenkrais again for people, because it's a hard word. It's just F-E-L DenKrais. Feldenkrais Institute is one word.
Yeah.
.org.
And you actually met Moshe Feldenkrais, who must have been a genius at understanding the body's intelligence, would you say?
Oh, he was. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, absolutely. There was, you know, a prime example of somebody who looked like to be in bad physical condition, overweight,
uh-huh.
a chain smoker,
huh.
an old Israeli man.
Yeah.
And, you know, who lived through certain years of catastrophes in Europe and led a hard and interesting life and became a genius in mathematics and physics. And he began his avenue into this work really through a study of judo, which he became a master of, one of the great masters in the world at the time, and where you really have to know physics and how you embody it, or you'll break.
What made him the genius? What did he understand about the body? What was the key to that disclosure?
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
Well, he must have realized that the body was something other than what his culture taught, and our culture said it was. He must have realized there was something else going on that he discovered as an original perception in order to develop his own work. He must have, well, probably what you're saying, he probably discovered the body's intelligence.
Mm. Yeah, I think that he certainly was extremely creative in his own use of his body and far more creative than anyone I'd ever met.
Uh-huh.
And I went a lot into my own biography with this on your last show. But I studied with a lot of people who are well known for their creativity. And, yeah, he was the most creative person I ever met in terms of his physical use of himself. And he never looked like what you'd expect. Because today there's a certain image, a very svelte, thin, muscular kind of an image of someone. But he could move with incredible power, speed, and grace. And that's how he functioned.
Is there a good book of his that you'd recommend, a Feldenkrais book? Talks about that.
Yeah, I think probably the best place to start would be something like Awareness Through Movement.
Uh-huh. And then you've also written about that in your books. What's the name of a book of yours that incorporates that?
Oh, the book that right now is my next book coming out is going to be called Change Your Age.
Uh-huh.
And it's the idea is to present the essential ingredients of this work in a form that's palatable to people so that they don't have to spend a long time studying it, but that they can participate in it to their benefit and begin to go down that journey of changing your age. So it begins with, in this case, with a program and a book. And I'm sure we'll have a DVD to follow.
Yeah, and this show program we've just done is a great introduction to all this work that people can then continue and investigate on their own. So thank you, Frank, for being a guest.
Well, thank you, Ellen.
Yes, I appreciate all the research you've done. Yes,
a good host, and I hope that your listeners find this interesting. And I wish everybody to have a more intelligent body and to do what they can to develop one.
Thank you. I'm just going to sign off here with this song that I like, The Song of the Soul, Chris Williamson. And I've been talking to Frank Wildman, and his website is FeldenkraisInstitute.org. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and you can reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net. You can also check my website, newrealities.com, or
newrealities.tv, and I welcome comments and questions. And do you have a way of people get in touch with you, Frank, or just through your website?
No, they can just find me directly on the internet anyway, just Frank Wildman.
Wildman.
Like
Thank
Wildman.
You. Thanks, Frank. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Owen.
Thank
Have
you.
A good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.